Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teaching Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you tonight, Laura?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Survived another weekend in the new house. I thought this was supposed to be the easy part.
I can never reach you anymore. You're always working. You're always busy. What's up with that?
It's really a pain. I don't know. I thought this was going to be the relax and enjoy it. Friday, my friend came over and helped me hang things all day long, which was good, but we didn't hang that much. Then the afternoon was spent trying to find her something to wear to some benefit thing she was going to.
And from then, your closet?
Yes, from my closet, which, everybody in my family is kind of long and straight up and down like a 2x4, and Susan's cute as a button, short and curvy. So things that looked good on us were just hideous on her. So we finally came up with something, but she tried on no fewer than 50 things in order to find one thing that was acceptable. And then yesterday and today we're outside working in the new yard, Dave. So that's what I've been doing.
It's not raining at your house?
Nope.
It's almost raining here. It's a little cloudy, but anyway. Well, thanks for the update, but I've been a little worried since I haven't been able to get in touch with you, so maybe this week will be better for that.
Let's hope it slows down.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about a few things before we get going tonight, just a few little housekeeping things. First of all, my summer conference schedule, I'll be in Atlanta. We rescheduled that date for sure for Thursday, July 14th, and it is at the Crown Plaza there, right at the perimeter, I think it's called. I might be misstating that a little bit, but anyway,
good mall
it's there.
Right there, FYI.
Yes, you will have to talk with me about that. And then we're going to Johnny's hometown, Memphis, Tennessee, Thursday, July 21st. I know, I'm kind of excited about that. I hope I get some North Mississippi people there for my home state. So I'm excited about that as well. Another thing is Blog Talk Radio, the show numbers had been messing up. Had we talked about this a few weeks ago, how it kept repeating
it,
the
same
show number? Yeah, that's fixed now. Johnny spent some time on that this afternoon, and so that's totally resolved, and I'm delighted that we look like we're back on track and not rerunning the same show over and over and over again. So the show numbers are on there accurately now.
Good.
Thirdly, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just said good.
Yeah, I don't know how it will affect iTunes listeners, but oh well. It's fixed now. At least it looks right on the website if people are trying to find different shows. And I'm able to go back and edit, so I'm going to go back and change some of those show titles to more accurately reflect what we talked about, because as I told someone who emailed me on Friday, it's a speech pathologist that I had the pleasure of meeting when I did my conference last year in Fishers, and she had come in from out of state because she was a longtime listener for the podcast, and she was asking me, what show did we talk about prerequisites for PECs? And I wanted to, just write back, I don't know, because I don't go back and listen to those. You know, we've talked about how painful that is for both of us to go back, and I'll go back and listen, but sometimes I don't really catalog when we did stuff, or I don't remember it. And my other point to her was, sometimes we think we're going to talk about one thing on the show, when we end up talking about something entirely different. So sometimes the show titles don't exactly match, but now maybe I'll be able to go back and edit those a little bit. All right. Thirdly, I wanted to mention on TeachMeToTalk.com's Facebook page, I put a couple of really cool links on there this week. Today I added a website that the speech pathologist Linda Burkhart does lots of AAC, Alternative Augmentative Communication, and her website is so great for speech pathologists and other therapists who are starting out and not knowing lots about AAC, and that's not a real strength of mine, that area. I just muddle through the best that I can, but her stuff is highly recommend it. And actually, a mom is who told me about this website. Kate is Abby's mom.
Oh.
Who recommended this site a couple years ago, or maybe longer than that, when we worked with Abby. But then I revisited some of that for the new therapy manual that I just did. And then another conference attendee had asked me a question about some AAC-related things, and so I dug that website back out. So I put it on, linked it on Facebook. It's L Burkhart, burkhart.com. And it, just to get there quickly, just go to teachmetotalk.com's Facebook page, and you can look at that. Another resource that's on there is a really cute sign language dictionary, and it's from a website called WeHands. And they actually have a DVD series for moms, and they're cute little songs for therapists, too. I posted a link, I would say several weeks ago, for their little diaper song that I just sang for days and days and days in my mind. What do they call those, earworms, where the song just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating in your mind. But that is, again, cute little DVD series using signs with original songs. And then there's a really great sign language dictionary on their website as well. So that's on there, and I wanted to mention those things. It's almost easier for me to put links like that on the Facebook page rather than the website, because it takes a few more screens to edit on the website, and I'm usually in such a hurry to get it done that I'd take the lesser of two evils, so I just pop it on Facebook. But that's always, I usually post a couple of new links a week for interesting websites or cool articles or anything like that, so I hope that'll be a good resource for our listeners too. All right, let's get going with our topics tonight. We have a mom that's supposed to call, but she hasn't called in yet, so I'm hoping that she's just a little delayed and will call in, and we're going to go ahead and take or read another question or two. But if anyone's listening and wants to call, tonight would be a fabulous night for that. We would love to hear from you, and the call-in number is 718.
I'm thinking, ooh, and I dialed the wrong number.
4332.
Sorry, I interrupted you, Laura. 1-718-766-4332.
Yeah, see, I was going to say, Kate, why don't you give us that number? And I thought, oh, don't say that, because she might not have it right in front of her, and that would be unfair to put her on the spot like that.
You'd think after dialing it over 100 times I would know it, but I had it open so that I would get it right, because I probably would have given it wrong. So there you go. But we got it.
Well, and that little dyslexic error there, looking at the three for the 8, and then now it sounds like my voice is going to go too, so hopefully we'll have someone else call that can do a better job of talking than I am doing and trying to read. Okay. And it looks like my computer's about to die, too. So this is just one of those nights. All right, let's start with this question. And hopefully, again, that mom will call. She says, this is from a therapist. And she says, I won't be able to call in tonight because I'll be on a plane. But in case you're looking for things to talk about, my current biggest issue is that my kids want new activities or games all the time. They don't want to repeat anything. I find myself spending a great deal of time coming up with different games and buying more games, for which I do not have any more space. These kids may be language delayed, but they certainly know how to say no more. Sometimes I plan a whole session thinking I have more than I need and then whip through the stuff so fast that I have to scramble. Then if I bring out a game we've played in the past, they indicate that we've already done this, therefore not of interest. And then she says, thanks for all the great work you do. I've learned so much. Boy, that would be a tough problem, a tough crowd of kids, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. I guess that she must work with a little bit older, I'm guessing. Preschool, I guess, is 3+.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like to me that she's probably in a preschool setting, too. And I would hate that for her, because I love to repeat previous activities, because that's where you see really the progress with kids. If something's always new, you don't always have a baseline. And granted, you're looking at, you know, longer phrases or more complex patterns that they're using. You're looking at lots of different things that you could really measure over time using new activities after new activities. But don't you like repeating the same thing for several weeks in a row, Kate, or having something for a few weeks and then bringing it back out a few weeks later and doing two or three sessions in a row and then rotating it, you know, maybe
absolutely.
Not doing it for two or three weeks. Yeah, and that's how I do therapy. Isn't that what you do with your materials? Yeah.
Yes, and, you know, the thing with most of the kids that I see anyway, if there isn't the repetition, frankly, you know, a lot of times it takes more than one exposure to something before they're A, interested, and B, able to really do it very functionally or really understand the concepts. And sometimes it takes for kids who are, you know, pretty significantly delayed, many, 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 many exposures to get them to a point where they're really functional with it, or they're really enjoying it, or, you know, they're really responding the way I'd like to see them respond. So, yeah, repetition for me is key. And, boy, that would be hard if every darn time they wanted something novel.
Oh! I think probably what I would do, if she's using lots of game kinds of things, I think I would take a new approach and use more free play kinds of things. And everybody should, if there are two or three kids that she's seeing at one time, it could be that she's seeing more at a time, but I would think that that would be two, three, maybe four tops. I would hope that that would be it. But what I would probably try to do then is think about maybe everybody plays farm animals, or everybody plays zoo animals, or everybody plays dress up, or we play with blocks and cars and trucks, so that it's not a structured game per se, so that she can introduce some novelty. And for the kid who may not be loving it, he might kind of expand on what his little friend is doing with the materials, rather than be so dependent on this is how you play and we're going to take so many turns and blah, blah, blah. Do you understand what I'm trying to say by that?
I do. Yeah, I was kind of surprised to hear. I mean, let me preface this by saying I have no experience working with that age, so it would all be novel to me, but I was kind of surprised just reading that email that she does do so many games.
Right.
You know, because the kids we see. Now I have a handful who like games, but even when they like them, a lot of times their interest is somewhat fleeting. You know,
you're limited by just a certain number of turns or
mm-hmm.
that one of the little board games that I might play as a child has progressed, and especially if maybe his strengths are like our little friends that are on the spectrum, and he might really love colors and shapes, and goodness knows we have spent about half of the shows that we've done talking about how we hate the focus on ABC's colors and numbers and shapes. But if you have children who are moving along language-wise and you're kind of looking at, again, using their strengths to keep them involved, Candyland Toddler is a game that I like. And I think you have that game too, don't you, Kate? It's the little castle with the shapes. And I don't play it all the time. I mean, I play it. If I have a child who really likes that kind of thing, and I almost use it as a transition activity, and so I can totally see that if I were going to be dependent on that kind of quote-unquote game all the time, where it would be hard to fill 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour with game after game after game, because like you were saying, it really is, their attention really is kind of fleeting to that kind of thing versus more free play activity where you're able to do a little bit more and it's not quite as structured. So if I were her, I would try to switch to more activities like that, or with Play-Doh, or we talked about several weeks on the show, several weeks ago, about zoo animals and all the different things you could do with zoo animals. And so she might go back and listen to that show, I think it's show number 110, and go back and listen to that and really think about, okay, I can take this one set of materials and here are all these different ways that I could use that, and that might give her kind of a launching board for what she could do. She might try to think about, too, more theme kinds of activities so that she is able to still kind of wrap our arms around what they're going to do and still plan a decent session with lots of different activities. But I probably wouldn't give quite as many choices, or probably wouldn't let it be okay for them to say, we're not going to play that. I mean, and not that we don't give choices, because you certainly do, but I think she might have given a little too much leeway, so that they're just some, you know, that they just might be automatically defaulting to, you know, we don't want to do that, even if they're not able to say it in that way. I would probably try to be a little bit more fun, but more insistent that, nope, this is what we're doing, and just proceed that way. I mean, did you read it like that?
I kind of did. I kind of wondered about that. Of course, we don't know.
Right.
You know, there are four-year-olds and there are four-year-olds. Some four-year-olds are on the two-year-old level, and some four-year-olds are on the four-year-old level, but they're really speechy kids, and we
right.
don't know exactly what her population obviously looks like. But the other thing I was thinking about, Laura, is she doesn't mention anything about, I mean, some of my tried and true, going to use it, because almost every kid, you know, you can find something for almost every child, particularly as they get a little older in our reference, you know, to almost three, you know, is using things like, well, theme-based, not, how would I put it, character-based activities, whether it be Thomas the Train or Toy Story or Dora or Diego or, and, you know, her population, the preschool population, they certainly are interested in those, you know, Disney or whatever the vehicle
is
those
kind of
characters.
Kind of show-based things.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, because so many times, I find that when I use those things, I can vary the activity, but, man, as long as Dora's involved or as long as Thomas the Train is involved, you can hold their attention for a pretty darn long time as opposed to, like you said, and I do, I just broke out, you know, I just moved, so I cleaned out my garage and found my Candyland game, and I've been using that lately, and I've had some kids really like it. Again, they're almost three and doing pretty well.
Right.
But she doesn't mention anything like that. And I wonder if she came up with some simple activities, whether it be making kind of a mystery box where she had a hole and she had characters in there and they passed it around and each one had to pull it out and tell her who it was, or, you know, some language-based activity, but based on using those very popular characters that kids just love at that age. I mean, they're older, but they're not that much older. I can't imagine.
They're not that
they're
much older,
mean.
And I would think she could do that. She could maybe pass that around, and they got to pick a character, and then everybody's character did something else. Everybody's character went to the farm, or everybody's character visited the zoo, or everybody's character that had a picnic, and then she could transition that and use pretend food, and then they're going to pick the food, and then they have to pretend they're going to cook the food, you know, in the microwave, and then, you know, she just could use lots and lots of different ideas based on, and different toys that don't necessarily even go together. I mean, how many
times
anything
to do with those characters, right?
Yeah,
but because
she's
using Thomas the Train or
he can still eat the food. Yeah, he can still eat the pretend food. They can still, you know, you can still use your Legos to build a house for those particular characters. Those characters can still do the Fisher-Price playground, or everybody's in the Tonka dump truck and you're going to race them across the room and then bring them back and then dump them all out and then do it again. You know, I would look at more free play kinds of things rather than structured games, because I think if you haven't done therapy like that, it's going to be hard and you're going to feel uncomfortable, like, I don't quite know what I'm doing here. But it's going to be more novel for the kids, and the activities are going to last a little bit longer. And if she'll just let the kids start to play a little bit with those kinds of things, even if they initially kind of don't want to do it, even if they were playing like Love and Family or Baby Dolls or something, one of those kids is going to do something that she thinks, oh, my gosh, that's a great idea. We can do this, you know, and kind of build on it from there. But that's what I would try to do, is try to steer it more toward those kinds of things rather than the finite activity or the finite game that she's going to do one thing with it, and then it's going to be over, and she's got to get something else out. So I would look toward that. My new therapy manual, Teach Me to Talk, the therapy manual, has lots of good ideas for how to use specific free play things like that to target lots of different goals. So that might be a resource for her, too, to take a look in there and start reading through goals and reading through, you know, usually under every goal there are three or four ways, there are three or four kinds of play activities that you could target the goal in. And it might just give her some new ideas and some new directions to go with therapy there. And there are also some game-based things in there, like if you're working on verbs, you know, and if you want to, instead of everybody looking at the verb flashcard, you would have, and naming it, you would have everybody act it out, or you would hide the cards around the room and then have them find them and then act out the verb or say the verb or whatever, or have the other little friends in the group guess. So, again, more creative kinds of ways to use traditional speech therapy activities or speech therapy routines and make it more play-based, because then the kids are going to want to do it more. And the other thing I would say to her that we kind of said before is just you have got to be so fun when you're playing that they want to keep it going and they want to keep doing it again. Because I really do think preschoolers can get stuck in the, nah, no, I don't want to do that. Again, even if they're not saying it that way, they can still, even if their language delay, get kind of stuck in that funk, which it sounds like where some of those kids might be. So I would look at some different things. Another thing that she might do is, and we talked about this on the show with the zoo animals, is do something different with, like, maybe hide those pretend characters in beans, or pretend like those characters, those little plastic people or animals, are going to go swimming and bring in a Rubbermaid with water. You know, that could last, oh, probably the whole darn session, playing with things. Yeah. Playing with things like that, and even with two or three kids, that could last a long, long, long time. Everybody could swim. All those little people could jump. You know, just lots and lots and lots of fun things that they could do with that, whether she's targeting new vocabulary or new grammatical patterns or whatever. She can think about how to establish her own, and continue to target her own goals with that variety of activities, but maybe just kind of thinking about it in a different way and not having really, again, structured games would make that a little easier for her. More free play stuff.
One of the things that's kind of inherently, I don't want to say bad, but difficult about doing a structured game is it's one person's turn and the other two or three are sitting there.
You're losing them. Yeah.
Yeah, really not doing all that much. And if she had changed up at least sometimes, I'm guessing if they're verbal enough, they'd be telling her, I want Dora, let's go swimming. You know, they'll be requesting what she did the week before. But, you know, there's a lot of downtime in a structured activity.
Right.
And the kids we see, and I assume the kids she sees, aren't always the easiest kids to engage or expect to sit and attend for long periods without, you know, a lot of help. So
moving it along, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if she can switch to that kind of activity, it might be better, or have a game and then do more of a free-based or free-play kind of thing, where, again, she's not just going to sit and let them play. She's still targeting her therapy goals in the midst of that, but at the same time, it's not the same thing that they, same old thing that they've done before, or even if it is, introduce one new element. And again, we spent some time with zoo animals that several weeks ago talking about, you know, the 8 or 10 different things that she might try. So she would need to think about kind of having those things, those ideas ready or lined up so that she could switch once the kids were tiring of it, if she felt like it was an appropriate time to switch. And again, I've already said this, and I want to move on after reiterating it one time. I wouldn't just take, I don't want to do this, as the automatic cue to move on. I would try to up the fun factor a little bit and keep them with it so that she's not constantly scrambling for something new, because that's no fun for a therapist either when you plan 10 things and nothing seems to suit what they want to do. That would make me frustrated too.
Right.
But I think about that by her saying, oh, no, we're doing this, come on, and then making it as fun as she possibly could would alleviate some of that.
Right. And it does sound like she's, you know, doing a great job really thinking about it and really planning
right.
for it and all of that. So we know her heart is definitely in the right place. She's just bugging
exactly.
a little bit to hold them. And, you know, like I said, we don't necessarily work with the easiest kids to engage, so we do know that that can be difficult at times.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We feel her
and
pain.
If we, I know. And if we miss the mark on this, Anne, send us a note and say, first of all, how stupid we are that we didn't get what you were really asking, and we'll give it another shot if we somehow misunderstood what the real issue was. But hopefully that'll give her some new direction and some new ideas with that. All right, second question that I want to do. This is from a mom named Joyce, and she says, Dear Laura, my son is 35 months and has a large vocabulary. His only problem is articulation of sounds. And she says, S, F, C-H and S-H. And boy, she's gotten to be really speechy, Kate. Did you notice how that she did the... she put the sounds in the marks that speech pathologists use to note sounds.
Yeah.
I should know what those are called. That word is escaping me right now. But between the slash lines, she's done it just like a speech pathologist would. And she says, he cannot end... with consonants well either, so he's dropping the ends of words. She says he can make these sounds correctly when I single them out, but if you add them in a few more syllables, he starts dropping them out again. He pronounces S with a lisp. He also gets his lip movements confused, ending with puckered lips for words that he has difficulties pronouncing. And she says he thinks that's the proper way to move his mouth for getting a sound right. I've been bringing him to a speech therapist. He hates it, and he hates practicing with me at home. And then she adds, he's got allergies and his nose is often stuffy. We're using a special spray already to help his adenoids. It's helping, but combined with his innately low voice and articulation problem, his speech is muffled and not too intelligible. What should I do? Thanks, Joyce. So what were your initial responses to that, Kate?
Sounds like he's doing really well to me.
It does. It does. I think he's moving along great. You know, mm-hmm. And again, we're looking at maybe more significantly delayed children than she's describing him for me to have a kid on my caseload that's 35 months and with a large vocabulary. I'm thinking, woohoo! We're just working on our tick now. Man, we did great. He's moving along great. And so that was my first response with, oh, my gosh, where's the celebration? Where's the excitement about how great he's doing now? If I had a kid that's just down to working on S, F, C, H, and S, H, I'd really almost be thinking about discharging him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think she should be really happy. And we haven't heard this kid talk. We might feel differently if we were able to see him, and we're not. And, again, this is just our opinion, and we're going with what she's written. I mean, there may be so many extenuating circumstances that she's depending on us to read between the lines, and we're not able to do it. We're just going with the information that she has written here. But it sounds like they are taking an almost 3-year-old and working on really higher-level articulation stuff. And because he's ready to just work on the artic stuff, they bumped him up to materials to work on the artic stuff, which to me it sounded like they were doing like maybe a lot of drill stuff and watch me say it like this, no, you're doing it wrong, and everything that would be a correct way to target articulation but an incorrect way to involve a little boy who's not quite even 3 yet. And so cognitively and developmentally, he is not ready for the whole sit down, move your mouth like this, watch me, no, you're still doing it wrong, blah, 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 say it like this. He's not ready for that. He still needs things to be play-based. He still needs things to be really, really fun. And it sounds like there's not a whole lot of that going on. To me, when I read that, it just seemed
right.
like it was pretty negative. Based
not
on
ready
how
because
long.
There's because he's delayed. Just not ready because he's not even 3 yet. You know, that's
right.
Most kids who are just approaching 3 really aren't mature or cognitively aware enough to do those kinds of really, really structured, artic kinds of things. They don't like it, and they do what he does. He hates it. So.
And so we balk. And how many of us want to really sit through something that we absolutely hate? You know, I'm about to be 45 and don't want to do it. You know, something that's really uncomfortable for me and that I'm not very good at. And if you're not giving him an incentive to play or to feel like he's successful, I can totally see where he would want to shut you down. I would, if I were the speech pathologist in this situation, I would really be taking a look at if these targets are even developmentally appropriate yet. Now, yes, working on final consonant sounds, those sounds should come in by the time he's turning three, and the earliest consonants that a child uses would come in first at the ends of words, and that would be, you know, PBM, your lip sounds, and then kind of your mid-tongue sounds. We call those alveolar sounds. That would be T, D, and N, and then some K's and some G's. But as far as expecting a consistent final S, F, C, H, or S, H, I think it's too early. I think there are lots of typically developing three-year-olds who don't have those sounds yet. So not that she wouldn't want to target those to kind of get him ready, but if that's all she's working on, I think that it's developmentally above where lots of us would think that it would be appropriate for her to be working. So I would reevaluate that situation. And if it's just that he's still in therapy for those sounds, and it may not be because mom says that he's so unintelligible, surely there's some sounds missing besides those for him to really be unintelligible.
You would think so, because, you know, normally when they have everything but those, they're not that difficult to understand.
Right.
So.
And if there's not a language focus going on, and that truly is all he has left to work on, I would probably give him a break from therapy and wait a little bit and let him grow up a little and mature a little. And I know I've said this on the show before, and I say it in the conferences that I do all the time. When I went to graduate school, if anybody had said that you were going to work on strictly articulation with a two-year-old, we would have just laughed and laughed and laughed and just said, ha, 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 you know, that kid's not ready. That's so silly. That's like trying to get, you know, teach a 13-year-old how to drive or teach a 5-year-old how to tie his shoes. He's just not developmentally ready yet. Why would you push that? But we all take those developmental milestones and we've pushed them down to the point that unless a kid is really... You know, you think, okay, this is the next goal for a kid. We're just going to work on that without taking into account where he really is functioning developmentally and where his little peers are functioning. And if he's just truly working on these four sounds, I think that's going to be too hard for him. And I think that I would give him some time to grow up and mature and see if, again, maturation doesn't take care of some of that. And if it doesn't, fine. Pop him back in therapy when he's four or, you know, when he's just a little bit more mature and able to do the things that he really needs to do to sit down and truly work on articulation. And certainly if the therapist can't figure out a way to make it fun and play-based, you don't really have any business working on those sounds right now with a kid that age. And that's the truth. And I know it's kind of harsh, and I hope I don't get nasty grams from people saying, how could you question someone else's clinical opinion? Well, you know, that's just how I feel about it. I think that developmentally, almost three-year-old is not really ready to work on those sounds yet. So I would really take a long, hard look at what you're working on and make sure that there's not something else that you could target first or, again, give him a break. And send him on his merry way and see him in a year when he's more mature and able to work on those things.
And they may come in on their own. I mean, it's the truth. And what he's doing is very common. He can get them in isolation, put them on a word. Oops, there they go. So.
Exactly. And if he were getting some finals, if he were doing P and B and M and T and D and N, I wouldn't worry about it. I would think, okay, those other finals are going to come on in when he's a teeny bit older, like you said, when maturation kicks in for him, or pop him in therapy when he's more developmentally ready to, you know, and that's a hard thing for kids, for you, you know, especially teaching a CH and an SH. That would be incredibly hard to teach that to a three-year-old, because they have to, one, look at your mouth to see what you're doing, and that's boring past one or two times. And two, he's got to be able, I don't know what his particular errors are other than just omission, but he's got to be able to follow some directions about, you know, move your tongue like this, do your lips like this, and that is just above where even sometimes a typically developing kid is functioning. So I would give him a big old high five and probably send him on his way for a little bit. And if there are more therapy goals that mom just hasn't articulated, maybe back up and work on those language goals rather than focusing so much on the articulation, because it sounds like it's frustrating for everybody involved, and that's just no fun for anybody. And I wouldn't want to waste my time or mom's time or this little guy's time by working on something he's not ready to do yet.
Yeah, because she doesn't really say anything about, she says he has lots of words.
Right.
She doesn't really say, you know, is he using long phrases? Is he, you know, so we don't really know how that looks.
How language is, mm-hmm. Yeah. And certainly, hopefully they haven't missed that piece and aren't working on articulation before his language is closer to an age-appropriate level. So, again, hopefully he's already talking in sentences. If not, and that mom is listening, you need to go in and talk to your therapist about that and say, you know, perhaps we should be working on making sure he's talking in 3-, 4-, 5-word sentences, even if it's not completely intelligible, and then go back and hit that articulation at the end. But maybe they've already done that, and they're just trying to clean up those last few sounds. But I don't know. It sounds like he's under way too much pressure to me, and I wouldn't want to be the therapist who is causing that pressure.
Nor would I. I mean, it doesn't sound like it's terribly productive if he's miserable, and it sounds like the carryover is significant enough he won't really do it with mom either. So.
Yeah, he hates it all the time. How about that? Yeah. The other thing. Yeah, and I did say to mom, too, in my response back to her, and this is actually on the website, that she's got to make everything in play and not be about, you know, sitting and doing his speech homework. You know, he's got to not even know he's doing speech. It's got to be just so ingrained in play and in the daily routines that he thinks is just part of what they're doing, not a special sit down right here for your articulation therapy today. You know, that's inappropriate for any kid who's turning three. So hopefully they'll be able to rethink this and get a better game plan. I did tell her if he does need lots of speech sound practice and she doesn't know how to incorporate that in play, the Apraxia DVD of mine is full of, you know, 2 hours of how to work on speech sounds in words and in play-based activities, so that she could take a look at that if she's not quite sure how to make that transition, if her therapist isn't terribly good at incorporating those kinds of things into play. She can take a look at that DVD for some ideas.
We don't have
all right, anything else you want to say about that?
Oh, just I was just saying we don't have anything about the nature of his specific
yeah.
sessions or anything, but sometimes it does happen that therapists who see lots of school-age kids, maybe at an agency, you know, kind of
first
facility,
school.
Yeah, then
yeah.
they might pick up a child who's almost three, and they might really try and do the same sorts of things that they do with their 5- and 6- and 7-year-old clients with a kid who's almost just approaching three, and he's telling her every week that that's not really working for him. So, I mean, you know, he is, obviously.
He
Mom's
is.
Aware of it.
He's telling her.
And
yeah.
He's telling her, I don't like it. And I just, you know, to me I would have a hard time subjecting my child to that if that was his weekly response. And particularly with how she says he's doing. But even if it's, you know, his language or speech issues were bigger than they are, I still would think this can't be right, you know, because
right.
we know for a fact that therapy really can and should be pretty enjoyable for the therapist and for the child.
And, it and for the mom.
Sound like, and for the mom, yeah. And it
yeah.
just sounds like this isn't the right formula for this child. So,
right. That was a great way to put that. And, you know, sometimes, and you've talked about this a lot, sometimes parents just expect, they just kind of think that this must be how all therapy is, and maybe all kids are supposed to be miserable in speech therapy, because you've had moms say that to you before when they try to compare how you do your developmental intervention sessions versus
how
our child's
speech. How I do my wannabe speech sessions is what you mean. You can say it.
But versus how the kids' speech therapists, how those sessions might be going. And moms, I know that they've said this to you because I've ended up seeing some of the children who've had those previous therapists, and they've said to you, well, he hates speech and he loves playing with you and doing the things that you do, even though you're kind of working on the same stuff, and he's saying a lot more for you than he is a speech therapist, but it must be okay because that's speech and
that's
you're doing
speech.
Yeah. And so sometimes moms don't even understand, or therapists,
a lot
that it
of
can
times,
be play-based.
Really, a lot of times it does happen because they may have, you know, when I see it happen is when they do have a really structured speech therapist who is really doing things that aren't really age-appropriate, and kids are throwing fits, and they're getting mad, and they're crying, and they're running the other direction. And it's so funny, not funny, but strange to me, I guess, that they say, well, he loves when you come and he plays so much better and he talks so much more. And I always think, well, doesn't that sound like a better speech session if he's
yeah.
talking with
regardless
me?
Of who, yeah.
Who's
regardless of
the,
who implemented
yeah.
that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they don't necessarily get it. And I think it's because they think if it's, well, they have a speech therapist who's employing a really, really disciplined, structured, you're going to sit here, you're going to look at this picture, you're going to point to it, you're going to name it. You know, it's very cut and dry. It's very,
right.
very structured. And kids just, you know, there's not a lot of fun involved in that. And kids who are struggling to talk don't necessarily get any huge thrill out of being forced to label a picture or whatever the discipline task may be. Yet if you put that into a play activity using things that they're interested in, they may do backflips trying to give you the same word. And I
right.
think that a lot of times that does come from therapists who really have more experience working with older kids, and they
yeah.
just think, well, you know, maybe if I use a puzzle that has zoo animals on it, then he'll like it. And, well, it's pretty obvious he doesn't. And I always wonder, like, how can they do that week after week after week? I mean, if I have a bad session, and trust me, occasionally I do, I'm miserable. I hate it. I'm thinking the whole
yeah,
next
me too.
Week, what am I going to do differently? I mean, I don't like to have a kid unhappy or visibly
yeah.
Avoiding what it is I'm trying to get them to do. Makes me nearly as uncomfortable as they are. And some therapists will do it week after week after week.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll even kind of tell the parents, that's speech. And I think, oh,
well,
my bad speech.
Well, and they blame it on behavior.
Yeah,
on
the kid.
Behavior on
mm-hmm.
the kid rather than looking in the mirror and mm-hmm. saying, okay, there's got to be a better way to do this. If this kid's crying, if this kid, like you said, is avoiding running away, rather than taking a cold, hard look at themselves and thinking, okay, I'm not presenting this in a developmentally appropriate, fun enough way so that this kid is really into me and into what I'm doing. And you don't teach a kid to like something and want to do something and be better at something when he's miserable. I mean, it doesn't start there. You have to meet him where he is. You have to meet him where with stuff he likes. Or you're never going to get him. And I cannot imagine a more horrible way to spend my career than having kids be upset with me all day. I mean, there's just no way that I could do that. Even if it were one kid who was consistently upset. I mean, that bothers me too. And then I make it my personal mission. I lay awake at night thinking, what am I going to take? How am I going to do this so that it's going to be better for him? But sometimes I think people don't give that a second thought. They just think, oh, well, that's just the way it is. He's going to just have to adjust without thinking, oh, the adjusting needs to be on my part. You know, I'm the one who's not really doing what I should do to meet him where he is developmentally. So hopefully mom can take a second look at that. It may be a change in approach by that therapist. It may be a change in therapist mom might have to pursue. And I know that's kind of harsh to hear. And, again, that might really step on some toes. But sometimes, you know, that's the best thing to do for a particular kid is just to make a switch and to get someone who's a little more willing and able to adjust and do work where a kid can be successful and work at what's more developmentally appropriate, a better approach for him. All right. Shall we move along?
Sure.
Okay. One last thing I wanted to talk about today, and this is a comment that I have. Let's see, it came in on the website, and it was to an article called The Top 10 Things Your Therapist May Be Too Nice to Tell You, and it's kind of a funny, humorous way to address with families all those things that come up when we see kids at home with things that parents might do to undermine the success of a session or even things that parents might not even think about. And so the article really, and we've talked about it several times on the podcast, you know, like, I don't want to come if your kid is sick or if anybody at your house is sick. You know, please turn off the giant big screen TV if I'm going to be working right in front of that with your kid. All those kind of common sense things that sometimes as therapists we want to tell families, but we might be a little too chicken or a little too professional to say in a way that it might really make sense to a parent so that the kid would have better sessions and so just that it would go better from the beginning. Well, this, I think she's a speech pathologist. Her name is Kara. She's said, her comment on the website was, please add, don't bribe your child or don't tell your child to make sure that they do good in speech. And she goes on to say, it irritates me when parents tell their child that they will go get ice cream, a toy, or some other treat if they do good in speech and then put the therapist on the spot by asking if their child did well. She said, I almost always use verbal praise and very rarely reward children with treats, and I tell the parents up front that I will always tell them their child did well. Imagine the damage that could be done to the child-therapist relationship if I told the parent the child did not do well. I once had a child who would not talk during sessions because the parents pressured her to make sure she did well in speech. She was so worried that she wouldn't do well that she would hardly say a word. And then she said, we finally had to switch therapists. And so I wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Okay, have at it.
You don't want to take a stab at that first? I'm just
nope.
Kidding. First of all,
I'm going to let you do it.
This is what I would say. I love that she's saying that she almost always uses verbal praise. And she says she rarely rewards the child with treats. Well, I don't know what her definition of that might be. I don't know if she means that, you know, and some therapists, especially school therapists or therapists who might be working in a more clinical situation, and it sounds like this might be her situation. It doesn't sound like to me she's a therapist that does home visits, but I could be wrong. But it sounds like she's thinking of the treat like you do all this boring stuff that you don't want to do, and then at the end you get a reward for doing a good job in speech. And she's saying to parents, I don't want to do that, and I don't want my response, I don't want your child's praise or reward or whatever from you to be contingent on how I say he did that day. And she says that's putting her in an uncomfortable situation. And I love that she said, I'm going to always say your kid did great. I love that. Don't you almost always say that, Kate?
Absolutely. Although my way of saying, if I think it was a little bit more of a difficult session, I will sometimes say it was a little bit harder for her today. And usually that is how I look at it, because so many of the kids I see, I always feel like they're giving at least 90%, if not 100%, because, you know, I think I approach
you
it in a way.
You set it up.
That, yes. But yet sometimes you see, you know, even specific things. Wow, she couldn't get any of the bilabial sounds in initial position today, but last week they were easy for her. Now, I don't think she's choosing to drop her B and her P and her M and all that.
Right.
She just couldn't do it that day. It was just
right.
difficult for her. I mean, we see kids vary quite a bit from session to session. And so if I think she gave her best shot, but it wasn't as easy for her, that's how I put it. It was a little bit harder for her today. You know, we kept working on those, but it was harder for her today. And that's how I really look at it. So, you know.
Yeah,
you know.
I say if a kid didn't do as well, and it might be a situation like you talked about, just kind of inconsistent speech performance, couldn't get all the sounds in the right places, or maybe even, you know, last week he popped out a bunch of two-word phrases, but this week I only heard single words. Or maybe last week we got 35 different words, and today he only said 15 different words. I might say to a mom, not our best session, something like that. But I don't, like you said, I don't really assign that blame to the kid in that he didn't do enough, he didn't do his part. Even if a kid is a holy terror, even if I think, boy, he has been a stinker today, and again, we know two-year-olds can be that way sometimes, even if it's been one of those days, and again, thank goodness that happens rarely rather than all the time, most of the time with the kids that you've seen for a while, I wouldn't really do the whole he did great or he did terrible thing with a parent either. And I love that she's saying to a parent, look, don't put me in that position because I'm going to always tell you your kid did great. So I love that she pointed that out. As far as treats go, I feel like everything we do in therapy is a treat, don't you?
I do.
If you're playing and having a good time, if the kid is requesting the next thing that you're playing with or requesting a turn or whatever, that's the reward, is that he's having a good time and so are you. And again, I say all the time, I want to be the best hour of the week. You know, so then I would look at that like, my goodness, what more natural reward is there than we're playing and we're having a good time? Everybody who's listened to this show more than today knows that you and I both feed kids and use junk food if they like it. That's kind of a treat thing, so I hope she's not looking at.
I think maybe she is, Laura. She talked about the parents taking them for ice cream or, you know, rewarding them with a treat. I think maybe she doesn't really approve of using treats in a session.
And you mean food.
Treats, yeah. Treats, candy, M&M's, Skittles, cheese balls, goldfish crackers. Let's see, what else do I have in my bag?
Teddy Grahams, Oreos. Cheez-Its.
Junk, total garbage.
Chips.
And you know what's interesting, because it always kind of works out that some kids I use those on every week or with every week, and some kids I never really do it, or I,
right.
You know, and then there are those kids that, well, gee, he was a little off today. I had to sweeten the pot a little bit with three M&Ms, you know. I mean, to me.
Who cares?
Yeah, it's really not a big deal. And I can say a couple of times over the years there have been kids who got a little bit too interested in that, but generally not. I mean, it is
right.
not an ongoing or a consistent problem at all. Kids, sometimes I use them to entice them to stay with me a little bit longer. A lot of times, I think. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, sometimes I use them to make the transition of Kate is leaving the house and taking her fun toys with her a little bit
right.
less difficult for them to tolerate. But, you know, some kids don't even know I have junk in my bag. It just kind of depends on the individual child.
It does. And when I have a kid that's really stuck on snack, I always think, okay, I'm not playing where he can be successful. I don't have enough stuff that either A, he likes, or B, he can do, or I haven't done enough to really reel him in during play if he's still so fixated on that snack. And I really think about that a lot with, okay, I still need to work a little bit harder when we're playing so that he wants to do that more than he wants to eat. There's some kids, though, that need to really eat that I might feed a couple of different, you know, have a snack for maybe a minute or two every 10 or 15 minutes because they need it to kind of re-regulate and want to stay with me. And mm-hmm. those are our really kind of sensory processing kids that either they're really, really busy and you can almost, you know, have to get up and move and do a whole lot of movement with them too, but then you can always, almost always lure them back to play with you with, you know, give them two or three chips and they're ready to move on to the next activity. So you use it kind of in a transitionary way. Or the kids that are kind of low arousal, those kids do great with snack too mm-hmm. because it kind of pumps them back up and then they're ready to do another play activity or two. So I think you have to, you could really use that to your advantage. And I always kind of chuckle when I think that a therapist thinks that it's inappropriate to use food because I think, boy, you are really missing a major mode of treatment with toddlers. And what is more functional than a kid learning how to request something to eat? How many times do parents say to us on our first few sessions, oh, if he could just tell me when he's hungry or she could just tell me what she wanted to eat? And granted, a parent's not going to want a kid to eat cookies all day long, but it's a start with requesting and using language functionally to get what you need to make it through the day. So I would really, if she's thinking about it in that way, and if she's specifically talking about food, I would really kind of change and tweak that a little bit so that she is able to use that a little more to her advantage.
There are still some therapists out there who are very, very opposed to using any food, and I guess particularly junk. I mean, I can't imagine saying, okay, here's your broccoli spear. You know, I don't know that that's going to fly. But, and I don't really get yeah. it. I mean, I just think.
I don't either.
I have had, and even have one now, a mom who really doesn't do much junk. And,
yeah.
You know, you do kind of have to clear what it is
right.
with the mom, and some moms just really don't use, give, and I certainly respect, you know, if they don't want to use, give their children any junk food, I don't want to be, I do have some who say, well, you know, he gets a little bit, it's okay that he has it when you're here, and I think, okay.
Yeah,
so
me too.
But if they really don't, then I respect that and don't do it, but let's face it, most kids have some sort of food that isn't entirely healthy during the course of most days. So,
and if it's just one time a week, and if you're using that really therapeutically, you're not going to give the kid the whole bowl of Skittles and say, sit down and have at it while I sit here and watch you chew. You're doing therapy. You're having them request. You're
right.
It's part of your, it's part of working toward his goal. It's therapeutic. It's not that, again, he's going to take the time out, the 15 minutes out of your session and sit and eat the whole bag of teddy
cans. Absolutely not. No, I mean, I always,
yeah.
unless I'm using it at the end of the session, kind of as a treat, and I do have a couple of kids on my caseload, particularly right now, who as soon as they get the vibe that I'm wrapping it up, I'm cleaning up, I'm wiping things off, I'm kind of chatting
yeah.
with mom, you know, they're starting to retreat. And one little guy, Laura, you used to see him, he doesn't really use too many words functionally or spontaneously, but, man, he knows chip, he knows candy, he knows all the cookie, and those
yeah.
are really the only words he uses spontaneously at all through the course of his
yeah.
day are those words that I taught him or we taught him a long time ago. And
because
it's like,
they're motivating.
Yeah. They're motivating, and but it does make it easier to get out of the house because
exactly.
So often kids aren't real happy when you're leaving, which is great. I mean, that means they
right.
want you to be there and they're enjoying themselves.
Right.
That's what we want. But
you're using
it
therapeutically. Yeah, mm-hmm. And there, and like I said before, you can really work, you know, you're going to use it for different purposes for different kids, but if you are limiting yourself by saying, I'm not ever going to do that, I would really encourage a therapist to rethink that approach, because there are tons and tons of ways that you can use that. I've had kids that really wanted a balloon at the end of the session, and if that's what it took for them to feel like they got a big reward or a big prize for playing that day, who cares? Give them the darn balloon. You know, who cares? So I don't feel that way. I wanted to talk about, and we'll start with this next week, I wanted to talk about this thing that I've seen, and I've heard a lot of therapists and parents. I frequent a lot, a listserv of speech pathologists throughout the United States, and they've talked about this on there quite a bit, and I've popped in on some parent boards, and they're talking about this. There's a book that talks about not giving a lot of verbal praise to children and how verbal praise can be damaging to children. And I have some really specific ideas about that as well. So we are at the end of our hour, so we're not going to go way over to talk about it, because I could probably, rant and rave for 15 or 20 minutes on this, just, you know, in one breath. So we'll begin the show with that next week. With, and you and I haven't had a chance to talk about that either, so it'll be a little bit more fair to you if I prep you on that too.
Okay.
And we'll start with that next week about the about praise and why I think it is absolutely necessary for us to give lots and lots of verbal praise to our little guys that when we're working with them on speech, and we'll kind of talk about that next week. And we have not gotten the update on your little girl that probably 6 weeks ago, it's been more than a month, I think, that you were, we talked about specifically on the show that, that you got kind of a new word list or some new targets because she was a little bit stuck. Did you ever do the update for us on the show, or did we just do it?
I think we just did it on our normal chat and not on the show.
So next week, let's start with those two things.
Okay.
With why praise is important and your update on your little girl, because she's made some gains, and so that sounds good. And I think the last time we did a show, you did a little tease on how you were going to ask me something on the air but not tell me ahead of time so that I could think of a really polished answer, and I ended up begging you to tell me what it was.
Of course.
We'll talk about that next time,
okay.
too. Yeah,
because I think that's interesting. Okay.
I do, too. All right. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.